All right, tonight then we begin our study in Genesis chapter 26. Now we've gone through several times the introductory material, so we'll not go through it again tonight, other than to merely say that we're down now in the life of Isaac. And what we're doing, again, is this, that starting back at the beginning, the call of Abraham way back here, Abraham had that great promise. What was the chapter and verse? If you go out of here knowing nothing else, I want you to know this.
12:1-3.
All right, 12:1-3. That there it was, the promise of the seed. Through thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. So somewhere down there in the future, we know that that seed is going to come. Now you and I today have the advantage of knowing down here, some 2,000 years after God gave the promise to Abraham, that the seed came and his name was Jesus. He was a Nazarene. He was born of Mary. We know all of those facts. But as we look at it back here, did Abraham know any of that? He didn't know anything about it. And so if we look at it the way that they have to look at it then, we just have to look at it with a chart like this. Normally, in fact, I won't say normally, always, I write down the line, put the cross there, put Pentecost. We do all of this because we can see the whole picture. But if we want to look at it realistically, as we're studying the Old Testament, there is the chart that we're studying. So far, we have had Abraham. We've looked at his life. Last week, Abraham died, and then we picked up the story of Isaac. Now, we are still in the story of Isaac today. Isaac had a brother. What was his name? Ishmael. What's happened to him?
We don't really know him.
What?
We don't really know anymore.
He's just going somewhere, hasn't he? He's going out, and he's away and establishing his own nation. We know that he's going to turn in to a great nation. Okay? Then we have a promise that is given to Isaac. What is the promise that was given to him? Okay, we can just put a ditto under that, that through thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. We're just going to follow it right on down the line. Now then, Isaac had two boys that we studied about last week, and what were their names?
Jacob and Esau.
All right, Jacob and Esau. We're now right in the middle of this, so I can't say what happened to Jacob or what happened to Esau, but what do you and I know now is going to be? Why did Jacob live? What is the major purpose of him? See, he is the chosen one, as we saw, and we're going to put a ditto down there again. In other words, every person that lives, that has any significance, that has any importance in history at all, is going to live in order to bring the Christ into existence. I hope that we can conceive this as we get through our study of the Old Testament, that every word, every sentence, every verse, every chapter, any way that you look at it, everything that you read in there points to the Christ. And any time that you take the Christ out of the picture, there is not a verse in the entire Bible that has any relevance at all. There is not any conception, any idea, any human being, none, that has any more importance than I am. Not a thing that is said carries any more weight than if I made a statement tonight. Now think about that. See, think about, really, the difference that there is in looking at it from the two viewpoints. If you look at it from the two viewpoints, if we go down here and pull a drunk man off of the street and tell him, give us some philosophy, and he slurs it out, and we can't understand it. We say, what? And finally we understand his slurring, drunken speech. That has as much meaning as anything in that Bible if Jesus is not the Christ, the Son of the living God. See the two differences that we have in here? So everything that is in there is pointing to the fact that Jesus is the Christ. And we need to understand that and appreciate it as we're going through this study. All right, the only reason then that we're studying chapter 26 tonight in studying the story of Jacob and Esau is because they have a part, a small part in the total history of bringing Jesus the Christ into existence. But since they did have this part of history, then it behooves us to go back and study this. Okay, last week now, we studied about, in chapter 25, how Jacob cheated Esau out of his birthright. And, wait a minute. That's what we're getting ready to study tonight. We studied about the prophecy here of where the two boys were born here. No, we did study it, didn't we? Yeah, it's another thing. We did study it. See, I'm not totally crazy. I'm half crazy. Now, how he cheated him out of his birthright. In fact, that was his name was showing that he was a supplanter, that he's somebody that trips up someone, and so he does that. Now then, in chapter 26, it starts out and it tells that there was a famine in the land of Canaan. Now, as we study these nations, what's the picture you get of the Philistines, the nation of the Philistines? Mighty or weak? What is your idea of a Philistine? Mighty. So mighty. And they were. That's about the way I would describe it. That those guys were mean. And they went to war and they were fighting and they just noted for their meanness. But at this time, we're going to see that the nation wasn't very large. It wasn't a very large nation right now. Now, I point that out to you because as you see it here, Isaac goes down to the Abimelech, the king of the Philistines. It appears that here is Isaac, a poor Hebrew, going down to the king of a mighty nation. See, that's kind of the idea we've got. We're going to see in just a little while that Isaac and his comrades, his cohorts, his family, his whatever you want to call everything he had, all of the people he had working for him, they were actually larger than the Philistines at this time. We'll see that in a minute. But now he goes down there, and look now in verse 3. It says, God told him, he says, now don't you go to Egypt and dwell in there. He was thinking about going down there. But don't you go to Egypt. You sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and I will bless thee, for unto thee and unto thy seed. Whoa, wait a minute. We ever heard this kind of talk before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just over and over and over again, isn't it? You see, of God promising these boys, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, don't you do this, you stay here, because through thy seed, certain things are going to happen. Okay, so he gives him the promise then, the same promise that he gave to Abraham there in verses 3 and 4. Look at verse 4. And I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heavens, and will give unto thy seed all these lands, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. So we might ask this question, and in fact, let's play a little game. Suppose we went out on the street and we asked people. We said, to whom was the promise given? Through thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. What would the answer be? Abraham. If you ask, almost everybody would know that. If you ask him, was it given to anybody else? What would the answer be? Probably not. See, they'd probably say, no, it was given to Abraham. Well, in essence, that is true. Because why is God giving it to Jacob? Why has he given it to Isaac? It is because of Abraham, isn't it? See, he's carrying it through, and these boys are not the originator of the promise. They are merely boys that are necessary to have offspring so that one day there can be a Hebrew that will bring in the Christ. Okay, in verses 5 through 11, I'm not going to read that other than do this in verse 6. So they go down there, it says that Isaac dwelt in Gihor, and the men of that place ask him of his wife and said, and he said, she is my sister. Ever heard this before?
Yeah,
we've heard this twice from Abraham, haven't we? Now, I wonder where Isaac got that idea. See, he married a very pretty wife, and he knows how daddy operates. And how often did Abraham tell the people, she's my sister? Everywhere he went, she's my sister, and he got out of trouble a lot of times like that. In fact, when you can live 175 years and stay out of all the trouble he did by saying that, only get in trouble twice, it's pretty good odds, right? So Isaac right here sees this, and so Isaac does the same thing. And so he then is, they then leave her alone. It doesn't say what they're doing, but it says, she's my wife. He was afraid they would kill her. And then Abimelech looked out and saw him then conducting himself with her in a way that would be inappropriate if she was not his wife. And he then calls him in and says, surely she is. And he said, yeah. And he said, why'd you tell me? And so it's the same thing over again. Then he balls him out because he tried to deceive him then. All right, now, in verse 12, it said, Isaac sowed in that land. So that means Isaac stayed there and farmed and did the things he should do. And in the same year, God blessed him 100-fold. The man waxed great and grew more and more until he became very great. And he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great household, and the Philistines envied him. And all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped up with the earth. Abraham had been down through that country during his lifetime. He had digged wells so that his cattle would have water. But the Philistines stopped them up because they didn't want the Hebrews living in that land anymore. It said in verse 16, and Abimelech said unto Isaac, go from us, for thou art mightier than we. And Isaac departed thence and encamped in the valley of Gihar and dwelt there. So, you see, at this time, the Hebrews were mightier than the Philistines. That God is blessing them in this way. All right, Abraham, or Isaac then, goes back in verse 18, redigs all the wells that his father had digged, and called them after the names that his father had called them. Then, in verse 27, it said, and Jehovah appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father, fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee, and multiply thy seed for my father Abraham's sake. Now, I point that verse out merely to show you that Jacob now is the chosen man, and God is repeating the promise. See, I'm going to do this through him. So, Abimelech then comes to Isaac there, and makes an agreement with him, and says, you leave. You treat me nice, and I'll treat you nice. So they made an agreement, and they departed. Now look in verse 34. And when Esau was 40 years old, he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. Here we see that he took these, he went out and he married these heathen women. And they were a grief of mind. What does that mean?
He didn't like them.
How many years would that involve? How many hours of the day? What all did they do? Did these girls just come in and didn't cook the way they liked? Is that what it's talking about? No, their total morality, their total religion, what they taught the children, how they conducted themselves, everything was totally opposite of the principles of Isaac and Rebekah. And it was a grief of mind. They were hurt deeply by these girls that are going to be the mother of their grandchildren. Now, the reason I point that out is because so oftentimes we go through reading this, and these people are just names. They're just, we just spell them. Abraham, get Isaac, Isaac, get Jacob, Jacob, get, and it just becomes a bunch of names. But these were real people. See, they were real people, and they had the same heartaches that we have. See, exactly the same. Okay, now in verse 27, another major event is going to happen that is to turn the tide of bringing the Christ into existence over here. And this is a rather unique, unusual situation because Jacob now is getting ready to deceive Esau out of his blessing. Now, when you were born into a family, you got two things into the Jewish family. You got a birthright and you got a blessing. Now, the birthright was that you would get twice the amount of possessions that your father's owned as any other child. That the firstborn would get twice the amount. Now, when you have the wealth that they have, that was quite a birthright. Then, on the other hand, at the death of the father, he would give the family a blessing. And the elder son would be the one that generally got the greater blessing. Now, this is something that obviously God's hand was guiding. Now, God, of course, is... In how many ways is God guiding these people all the time? It's constant. And in this, God was guiding them. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to work if you try it. Just like if you try to do other things that God would have these people to do, it's not going to work. You call your children in and you give them a blessing and you say, this is what's going to happen to you. You will become a great nation. You will do this. I don't think your blessing is going to work. But their blessing did work. And the reason their blessing worked is the same reason that people in those days were inspired. They could perform miracles and these other things happened to them. God was with them. Right now, at the end of a man's life, he would call his family in and he would give them a blessing. And he would bless each child and tell each child what was going to happen to them in the future. And the firstborn would get the greatest blessing. So now it is time for Isaac to die, and he knows it. And so before he dies, he's getting ready to give the blessing. So then he says in chapter 27, in the first four verses, he calls in Esau and he tells him. He said, Esau, you're my oldest son. I want you to go out hunting now. Go out and get a deer. Bring me in some venison because I love it so much. Make me some food and bring it in to me so that I can have a good dinner. And then after this dinner that you fix me, then I am going to bless your soul. I'm going to give you a blessing before you die. Alright, so everything is set. Today is the day that Isaac will give the blessing. Alright, in verse 5, and Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son. Now remember the family relationship we have here? Is it a good one? No. We've got mama's boy and daddy's boy. We have a division in this family. And so Rebekah hears that daddy is about to give the blessing to Esau. So she runs out and gets her little fair-haired boy, Jacob, and brings him in and says, now, son, I heard what your daddy said, and Esau is out hunting for venison, so I want you to do something. It'll take him a little while to find the venison. So you go out now and you get, what is it, two kids of the goats. And you bring them in, and I will fix your dad a dinner like he's never eaten before. I'm going to fix him a Thanksgiving dinner, is the way it would be in American talk. I'm going to fix him a dinner that he just will dearly love. And then he will give you the blessing. Well, of course, we've got the problem here. Because Esau is an outdoorsman. And what did he have on his body?
Hair.
How much hair? So thick, he was called hairy. So he had hair all over his body. And so he said, well, my dad will know he'll be able to tell the difference between us. And so she said, no, here's what I'm going to do. Said, you go out and you kill those goats. You take their hides and you fix them so that you can make armbands out of them. Put them over your hand and over your arms. And you give me the meat. I'll take care of the meat. You take care of the hide and get yourself fixed up here so that all this hair will be over your body. Now, when you get to thinking about this, how hairy does that make Esau?
Pretty hairy.
See, because he's not going to be able to tell the difference between this goat hide and Esau. Esau was a hairy man. That's the point that we're making right here. All right, so he said, now you do this. And then he says in verse 12, Jacob says, it won't work, Mom. He said, my father, peradventure, maybe will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. And she said, you obey me, son. You go get him. You bring him in. I'll take care of that situation. So Rebekah then took the goodly garments of Esau, her elder son, which were in her house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. She put on the skins of the kids of the goats on his hand and the smooth of his neck. And she gave him the savory or delicious food and the bread which she had prepared in the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father. Here then is a confrontation that he has with his dad. And this must have been quite an experience, especially for Jacob. Jacob knows if he gets caught, he's in trouble. He is not going to get a blessing. Now, as the second son, will he get any blessings if he does this thing the right way? Esau will get a great blessing. Will Jacob get any? Yes, he will get a very fine blessing. But if he gets caught, he knows that he'll end up not getting any blessing. So here he goes in, and as he goes in, the father obviously is blind. And he said, "Who art thou, my son?" And Jacob said unto his father, "I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, set and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me." And Isaac said unto his son, "How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son?" Now, I might stop right here. Why didn't he recognize his voice? Probably terribly hard of hearing, you see, at this time. And that would answer it. The answer is, I don't know why he didn't do it. The Bible doesn't tell us. But obviously, if two guys came in and tried to do that to me right now, even though I am hard of hearing, I'd be able to tell the difference in their voice. And just like that, be able to tell that there's something wrong. He couldn't. Well, what you do in a case like this is, you look at it, is that a lie? Or is there some obvious explanation that could have taken place? And if there is an obvious explanation, then you must accept it. And of course, the obvious explanation is, since he was old, since he was blind, why, he was probably extremely hard of hearing. And if the boy gets down and yells in his ear, "Dad," you know, "set up." How many people have to talk to old people like that? A lot of times, you see, it has to be done. Cases like that, you don't recognize voice. You recognize just words. Okay, so he wanted to know, how did you get that deer so fast? This was the quickest hunting trip he had ever seen in his life. And so Jacob tells him, he said, "Because Jehovah thy God sent me good speed." And Isaac said unto Jacob, "Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." Now, does he suspect? He suspects something, see, at this time, or he would never have done that. So, if you were Jacob, how would you be feeling along about this time? Come over here and let me feel you. Now, on the other hand, it could be that each time that they go in, this is the way that he would identify himself, was by feeling. And he has been doing this over the years, and so it might not be as big a situation as I'm making it there, because blind people do it in that way, especially if they're hard of hearing there. Okay, then it says, he went to him, in verse 22, and Jacob went near unto him, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." In other words, you sound like Jacob. Best I can make out. But the hands certainly are the hands of Esau. And it shows us really how hairy that he had to be. It said, "And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him." And so he said, "And thou art my very son, Esau." And he said, "I am." And he said, "Bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, and then I will kiss you." So he brought it over to him. When he got over there, he made one more test. What did he do? He smelled him. And he sure smelled like Esau. Why did he smell like Esau instead of mother's little fair-haired boy that's been in there baking pies?
Because he's wearing his clothes.
He's wearing his clothes that hadn't been washed for 3 months. See? And so he's wearing Esau's clothes, and obviously he's going to smell like him. So he then is convinced that that this must be Esau. So he ate the meal. And then he says this in verse 28. He said, "And God give thee the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and new wine." Now here's the big one right here. "Let peoples serve thee." You're going to be a man that's going to develop into a nation, and other peoples will serve you. "And nations bow down to thee." Here it is. "Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be every one that blesseth thee." Now, the latter part, is that the same promise that God has given to Abraham that is being passed on? All right, so here now, he is being chosen to be the Lord over his brothers. Now, this means Jacob now is going to be over Esau. Well, Jacob leaves. Obviously, gets out there as quickly as he can. Isaac comes in as fast as... Esau comes in as fast as he can from the hunting trip, picks up the food, runs into his dad, says, "Here, Dad, here's the venison that you asked me to give to you." Can you imagine what goes through the old man's heart? See, at this time. Now, did they take a blessing lightly? No. This is the greatest thing that could be bestowed. See? And so, we don't own anything that has the value of this blessing. So you can't imagine if somebody came in and took your diamond ring or took a very valuable thing out of your house, and you would say, I would just be shocked if they took a diamond ring that belonged to my mother and her grandmother and her grandmother, an heirloom. Oh, what have I lost? You haven't lost anything in comparison to a blessing. So this is going to be a traumatic situation here. So Esau comes running in, and verse 33, and Isaac trembled very exceedingly. Stop on that. Sit there about 30 minutes and think about that. Now, I'm serious when I say that's about what it would take. You sit down, and you need to sit there and think. Here is this old man on the day of the blessing, and when he hears his son come in, Esau, and he began to shake exceedingly. Why?
He knew what happened.
He knew what's happened. He knows that a great disaster has happened that he didn't intend to take place. All right? In verse 33, Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, "Who then is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me, and I have eaten of all before? Eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed." Now, there's an important statement. Who was the man that came in, and I ate of his meal, and I felt of him, and I blessed him, and he shall be blessed?
Means he's not going to change his mind.
He can't. That's what that means. Whatever I said will take place. This is something that comes from God, see. This is not something where man is negotiating it back and forth. But the blessing in this Hebrew religion was something that came from God. And Isaac says, it's happened, and it shall be blessed. It's just like, what would happen? Now, I can't imagine this happening, but what would happen if God said something he didn't mean? What would happen if God said, "Let there be," and then some outlandish thing, "Let there be rats all over the world"? What would happen? There would be rats all over the world. That's what would happen if God said it, isn't it? Now, God doesn't make mistakes, so God is not going to say that in that way. But this right here is just about like this. God is giving a blessing. And God is giving a blessing to pass on, you see, to the child. And this is a blessing that God has given to pass on. And when it is passed on, it will happen. I suppose it would be like if somehow I could break into... to the Rockefeller Foundation and steal a check out of there worth $16 million written out to cash, signed by the Kennedys. I have it. Now, what will happen? Can I cash the check? Oh, don't get technical with me and say a bank would say, "What's the $16 million for?" And they call somebody. I know that there's a lot of critics like that. But I mean, I'm talking about, is that check good?
Sure.
What happened if I make out a check for $10 Make it out cash. Give it to Steve here. Okay. What will happen? See? And I give it to the wrong guy. That's the way I want us to look at this blessing. Isaac said, I have given the blessing, and whoever it is, he shall be blessed. Would you quake and tremble if you didn't know? And you had done that? See, it's just an awesome thing. Deb, or Kathy, whichever one have you had up your hand? Did you have up your hand, Deb?
No.
You didn't? Well, then it's Kathy. Okay.
But that's the point. Why if God wanted Jacob to happen?
Don't ask me that question. I don't know, Kathy. Okay, the question is, if God wanted Jacob to have it, and He did, didn't He? Why didn't He have him to be born first? I don't know. That's why I don't know why God did anything. You see, the only thing that we can take is, I do know what God did do. And why God did it this way, I don't know. Now, I can tell you this. If we peek ahead, do you want to cheat and peek way ahead over here? Go way, way, way on this side of the cross and come down here and learn a story about those boys? It'd be cheating. You need to wait a couple of years until we study it out to get down here.
Let's do it.
But Paul does tell us what God did and really why God did it. But as soon as I tell you what Paul said, then you'll ask me, well, why did he do it that way? So I'm not going to tell you. Unless you promise me not to ask why.
All right.
Okay. That's kind of like a joke I heard here the other day. I don't know if it's a joke or not. I guess it must have been. It's on Paul Harvey News. That a guy came into a place and he had one leg. And a woman looked up and said, "Oh, mister," said, "how did that happen?" And he looked kind of disgusted. He, you know, he's asked that all the time. He said, "Well," he said, "ma'am," he said, "I don't mind telling you how it happened if you won't ask me anything else." And she said, "Oh, I won't." He said, "I got it bit off." Now, that's kind of like this question that you ask right there. If you won't ask me why, then I'll tell you. Go to the book of Romans in the 9th chapter. Over here, it is showing that God makes choices in whatever way God wants to make a choice. And his lesson is, don't ask why. That's his lesson. If God says it, you believe it. And God uses free will, and God says this, and God makes all these choices, and when God makes choices, don't ask why. He said, now, for instance, way back there, said God formed the little boys in the womb, Jacob and Esau. And before they were born, before either one of them had done good or evil, neither one of them had done anything, God made a choice. An arbitrary choice. I'll take the second instead of the first. His point is, don't you ask why. You accept that fact. Now, wonder why Paul's trying to make that point. Is he trying to make the point the way I am so the captain won't ask me why? No. Now, here's the point he's trying to make, and that is, how does God save you over here? After God has done all of this, you're saved by the blood of Christ. But what does God require out of you?
Faith.
Why? I don't understand it. And I won't accept it until I understand it. What's the point? No, if God says, I save you by faith, then I save you by faith, and what do? You believe it. That's right, see? You do it. So in order to prove that point, Kathy, about faith, he actually uses this, and he really answers your question, that God did these things to show that God is in control and God has made choices all the way along. Now, why God made that choice, I don't know. But he did. Now, what's the matter with you?
Why does it say he hated him?
Hated means he loved less. And in love less there, that's a technical question I don't want to get into. He's talking about the nations on down. If you look at it, he isn't talking about the two boys. He's talking about the nations that came from the two boys. That God loved the nation of Israel more than he loved the nation that of Edom that eventually comes from Esau.
Okay.
That's what he's talking about. Okay. Now then, in verse 34, Esau heard the words of his father and cried with an exceeding great and bitter cry. I'll put that in proper perspective. Here is a woodsman. Here is a tough guy. Here is an outdoorsman. And what does he do? Cries with an exceedingly bitter cry. See, this is a very hurting thing. And then he said, "Bless me, even me also, my father." And he said, "Thy brother came with guile." Now we might stop right there and I'll ask you a question. Did God approve of that? I'm going to ask you before you ask me, because I don't know the answer. Oh, I do too know the answer. I just won't admit it. And you won't confess it. Did God approve of guile? Lying?
No.
God didn't approve of guile and lying. Did he get this birthright by lying?
Yes.
Yeah. Did God want him to have the birthright?
Yes.
Did God approve of him getting it by lying?
No.
Does it say God approved of him getting it by lying?
Didn't it say in the latter part of Genesis that in Joseph's particular case, it said even though it was meant for evil, God meant it for good?
Later on in another case like this, that's right, where certain people did evil things, God intended for it to turn out for good. Here's the key. Now, God doesn't approve of lying. God cannot lie. He is not a party to lying. He doesn't approve of these things. And in this story, nowhere does it indicate that God approves of what Jacob is doing. But the Bible does say that God was able to look and tell what was going to happen. Now, let's put it this way. Let's suppose that we have a couple guys here. We have John and Steve, and they're getting ready to go into business deal. Now, everybody knows that, John has more money than Steve. Right, Steve?
Right,
everybody knows John has more money than Steve. And so you look at this, and obviously, this is a business deal they're going into. John's putting up 95% of the money. Steve's putting up 5% of it. And they're going into a big one, and you see, to make a whole lot of money. Now, suppose that I have the wisdom to look at this situation and know that Steve is such a conniving, underhanded, distrustful businessman that he will take advantage of John. And in 10 years from now, Steve will own 95% of the business and John will own 5%. And I know that. And I tell all of you that tonight. That's, in fact, I'm going to change his name from Steve to Conniver. In fact, what was Jacob called?
Surplanter.
A surplanter, wasn't he? Yeah, so I tell you that. That's right there is a conniver. And he will do this. And the rich man will lose his money and the poor man will get it all. Now then, suppose that they go out there and they go to work and Steve starts in his underhanded conniving, lying, cheating, and cheats John out of all of his money, and 10 years from now it turns out just like I said it. Is it my fault? Do I approve of what Steve is getting ready to do? No. Just because I would have the wisdom to see that this is going to happen doesn't mean I approve of it or guilty. God has the foreknowledge, He has the power to be able to look and see this is what's going to happen. And He just tells that's what's going to happen. And the Bible records that's what did happen. Nowhere does it say God planned it to happen in this way. God merely is foreseeing and foretelling what will happen. It happened exactly the way that God said it. Now, in verse 35, it says then, "Thy brother came with guile and hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing." So he's named the right kind of a guy, the tripper. The guy that will catch you, make you fall. It's See, he's cheated me these two times.
Back in chapter 25, when he sold the birthright for the meal, is that not a legal thing to do?
As far as I know, the getting the birthright was legal. Now, morally speaking, I don't know. I mean, that's where you have to take the whole picture. Legally, it was. I don't know of any illegality or any sin that I could put on that other than using his brother's misfortune for his own and taking advantage and for a pot of soup, you know, taking a total birthright. That would be like somebody like you coming up and trading me something, and so you trade me your handkerchief for everything I own. And probably people would understand that you took advantage of me in some way if it happened. So I think that's at least that is the way. See, you might say, well, it was an even trade. I just talked with Lowell and negotiated it and got him to trade me, you see, all this for my handkerchief. And he was willing to do it because I needed to blow my nose. And so Lowell said, yes, I will. What he says is it wasn't fair in there. Okay. In Isaac then... he said, well, haven't you reserved a blessing for me? And he said, well, yeah, I have. Said, receive one for you in here. So he's going to give him then the blessing. And, let's see here. I've given him for this. He said, behold, I have made him thy Lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants. And with grain and new wine have I sustained him. What then shall I do for thee, my son? Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me. Even me also, my father. Esau lifted up his voice and wept, and Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, of the fatness of the earth shall be thy dwelling. In other words, you're going to have to live in the outdoors. You're going to have to be an outdoorsman of the dew of the heavens from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live. What does that mean? You're going to be a warring nation. See? And thou shalt serve thy brother, just like I told you that you're going to do. And it shall come to pass when thou shalt break loose. Now you're going to fight him. And you will break loose, that thou shalt shake his yoke from off thy neck. You're going to fight. You're going to get out from under his control, the nation that will come from you. You'll hate him, and you're going to fight him, and you're going to leave, and you're going to break him off so that he is not in control of you. And what really is going to happen is that Jacob is going to beget the nation of Israel. Who is Esau going to beget? The Edomites. And they're going to war against one another. And they're going to hate each other. But the Edomites will go off and be a nation within themselves and try every way that they can to destroy Israel. Is what's really going to happen. And verse 41, and Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob. In other words, my daddy is getting ready to die in the next few weeks here. And there will be a mourning period in the family. And I'm going to wait till that's over, and then I'm going to kill him. That's what I'm going to do. That's how mad he was. Well, he obviously told this to somebody, and Rebecca hears it. She sends for Jacob, tells Jacob, said he's getting ready to kill you. So what I want you to do is leave, go back to my father's house. Now, where's this again? Back in to the early Chaldees again, way back in where Abraham and Isaac got their wives and so forth. So you go back there and you flee to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry there with him a few days and tell thy brother's fury, turn away. And when he said, when his fury gets over that, then, she said, I'll send for you and tell you, you can come back. Because time heals all things. And time will soothe the anger. And when I feel that it's safe for you, that Esau will not kill you, then I'll call for you and then you come on back home. He said, should I be bereaved of you both in one day? In other words, my husband's getting ready to die. Now, should I be bereaved of you? So, he takes off in chapter 28. And he is going to back to Haran or the Ur of the Chaldees. Now in verse 3, and God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee a people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land of thy sojournings. Here we have the promise repeated again. Alright, look down at verse 8. Look at the character of Esau. Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father. So what did he do? He goes and takes a couple more. I'll show them. If this upsets my dad and mom, I'll show them. So he goes on down and takes some more. That shows his character. Now, we're learning a little bit about Esau, aren't we? I mean, we can feel sorry for the guy. And he was cheated out of these things, but what was his character? See, the kind of individual that he really was. Now, we might add one other little thing in here. As we see that God chose Jacob over Esau, even though Jacob was the second born, we might ask, why did he choose him over Esau? Well, it might be God had a reason. Character differences, you see in here somehow or another. Even though Jacob did some things that shouldn't be done, it appears that he's not of the character that Esau was.
Mm-hmm. Plus all the other sons went to the same area for their wives, the mm-hmm. the Chaldean. Mm-hmm. So it shows that the line is pure anyway.
Yeah, right.
Where he goes to the foreign nation. Well, mentioned that he took a wife of Ishmael, one of the daughters of mm-hmm. Ishmael.
Yeah. So he's taking these that the father will not approve of. Now, he's taking off, and he gets over to a certain place, and he lays down at night and goes to bed. Now, in verse 11, he took a stone and put it under his head for a pillow. Do you ever sleep, use a rock for a pillow? Kind of a funny way to put it, you see, why would anybody use a rock for a pillow? Well, what they did in those days, rather than use a pillow the way we do, you know, that put it there and then put your head on it like this, they would lay on their back, they would take a rock and put in the pit of their neck so that it would hold them up. In here. Now, I know what we do. We go down to Nordstrom's and we buy that little curved foam rubber thing, you know, and put it in the back of the neck and sleep in it that way. But if you lay down on the ground, try it sometime. I've tried it to see why they would use it. And I assure you, it's a whole lot better than just laying down on the ground with your head down there and that part of your neck in there. You put it in there for the support. So he got him a pillow then. He did that. And that night he dreamed, verse 12. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached down to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, Jehovah stood above it and said, I am Jehovah, the God of Abraham, thy father, the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And to thy seed shall be, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth. And thou shalt spread abroad to the west, the east, the north, and the south. And in thee, and in thy seed, shall all families of the earth be blessed. Are we carrying this promise through? It's just being pounded out. See, it's a great promise that they have there. And so he tells it. He said, I want you now to go, and I will be with you, and I'll not leave you, and so forth. Now in verse 16. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, surely Jehovah is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? What do you mean by that? How awesome is this place? What a terrifying, awesome experience it is to know that I'm standing right here where Jehovah's been. It said, and he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Right here where I am is the house of God and the gate of heaven. You have access to heaven. Guess what he's going to name this place? There's going to be a city built there. House of God. Alright? The Hebrew name... Right! That's right. The Hebrew name is down in verse 19 where it tells you, and he called the name of that place Bethel. Now, the first four letters, Beth, really Beth in Hebrew, is house. What is El? That's from the word God. Means God. So it means the house of God. So that now is where the city of Bethel is going to be. Now he made a vow there in verse 20. Jacob vowed a vow saying, If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, and Jehovah will be my God, then this stone, which I have set up for a pillar, shall be God's house. So he makes him a monument there, and takes that stone and sets it up, and it's going to be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Now we've had a tenth mentioned one time before. Who gave it to whom? Abraham gave it to Melchizedek back in chapter 14 of the book of Genesis. Now then here, he said, I will give a tenth to thee. This is the second time that we've had that figure, that percentage used. It's rather interesting because at this time, is a tenth commanded?
No.
We have no command as far as we know. If God has commanded it, he's done it directly to the people. But somehow they know that a tenth is a certain figure that they are using and giving in this way. Later on, when God gives Moses the law, he will incorporate it as a commandment and say, you give a tenth. But right back in here now, we're having the origin of all this. Okay, there's where we close, but now in chapter 29, Jacob now is leaving this country and going in to Haran. He's going to go there, he will find him a wife, he will have children, and next week we'll see what happens to him along that line. Dave?
How did they give a tenth back to God?
By sacrificing it. In other words, you have 10 sheep, you sacrifice one to God. Mm-hmm. Okay, class dismissed.